welcome one and all once again to Dual World in episode 51. As we're in the midst or the final week of our fall game and preview, and I mean, we have, you know, a lineup this week. We have Daniel joining us once again. I think you've been off for 2 weeks, or is it just one?
I think it's just one due to a mix-up.
Yeah, we had that interview last week, and we had to have it at that time.
Yeah, that's fine.
We have Chad, who is going to semi-join us because his mic's giving out of static. So he's
coming to you live from the snowstorm outside the Staples Center.
Yes, everybody's going to believe this. No one in LA.
Yeah, that's the joke.
Fair enough, because I hear it takes a lot of money to rent that place out, so it must cost even more to have a snowstorm there. And I am so not going to try to pronounce your name, so go ahead and introduce yourself.
Hey, it's Yazid, the resident crazy Arab who happens to play games, and I happen to be here. Hello.
So, I mean, I tried my best. I was telling Daniel this beforehand. We have really odd taste among, like, the normal 6 or 7 hosts here, because of all of us. I don't think anybody here has actually bought Modern Warfare 3.
No.
And I know Jason and Adrian have Skyrim, but neither are available today. Adrian's also celebrating his sister's birthday, and Jason's watching football. I guess the Giants are playing today. Which is kind of odd since I'm in New York and he's in California and he's the one who's skipping a podcast to watch them. But there's that. We hopefully we'll have something on those two games next week. I mean, they're the biggest two releases. Well, they were two of the biggest releases this week. So yeah, Chad, you were saying you have gotten a chance to play Skyrim?
I've put like 10 hours into it, yeah.
Oh, so you do have it.
Hi. Yep.
Or hey.
I totally
then
have.
Then why don't you speak up about that? So go ahead and tell us about that.
We're jumping right into that?
Yes, we're jumping right into that.
Okay. You know Oblivion? It's kind of like that. Actually, ridiculously like that, because I got home from downtown, it was like 2 in the morning or something, because that's when it unlocked on Steam. So I'm like, great, wait 3 hours for it to decrypt, because that's how long it takes, but not really. But decrypting does take a long time anyway. So it's there, sitting on my hard drive, excited, ready to start it, right? Yeah, I should have known, it's a Bethesda game.
It doesn't work.
Boot up, it gets to the menu screen, crash. Okay, whatever, it's the first time I ran it. Whatever, I'll just try it again, it'll work this time. No, totally doesn't. So, Googling, despite the fact that it's only been released for, like, hours, a bunch of people have been experiencing that problem or whatever, so you have to go in and manually modify your sound. So maybe that's why my sound is screwy, because I had to go in and mess with my sound settings.
So something has changed.
That might be it. But anyway, I had to put it down to the lowest sound quality settings, or else the game just wouldn't run. And then after I did that, it runs perfectly, so whatever, there's that anyway. Bethesda jank. Once I got it running though, it's very, 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 very good. It's incredibly reminiscent of Oblivion, as most people would probably predict. Like, it's, you'd feel right at home. Even now, initially, the graphical leap really struck me. Like, it was very, very good looking compared to Oblivion. But now it's like, I don't even notice, because I'm just kind of in the world doing my thing, and I'm like, I know it's better looking than Oblivion, but I kind of don't even care, because that's really not what I'm there for. It's...
Alright.
It's kind of... I don't want to say it's the most immersive game I've ever played, because that just sounds really,
pretentious?
Yeah. It sounds like I'm employing a shitload of hyperbole, which I don't really intend to do. But this is one of the first games in a while where I've talked a lot. like during the game, I kind of engage in dialogue with these characters, which is really weird. I'm pretty sure that's messed up on like several different psychological levels. But no, I'll totally, when people say something, I will answer them in standard Chad manner. Because I don't know, it's
upset when they don't answer you back.
No, of course not. They're not real.
So that's the guy talking to them.
I know, but do I shut up ever?
Chad, have you ridden up mountains on a horse yet, or have you seen any mammoths drop out of the sky?
No, none of that. Like other than that initial problem, I've ridden my horse backwards. That was kind of cool. But, like, other than that and the initial, like, launching the game problems, I haven't gotten any of typical, like, Bethesda screwiness, which is kind of good and a little disappointing, because sometimes that stuff can be pretty...
That's what you want, yeah. I'm probably gonna, because I'm waiting for the price to drop on Skyrim, because it will do. I'm gonna end up missing out on all of that, which is gonna be disappointing. There's nothing like seeing a mammoth drop out of the sky and watching it die as it hits the ground in person.
Yeah, no, that's a pretty impressive sight. And then you don't have to kill the mammoth yourself, so the giants don't murder you.
Or as I've seen, like, a horse that kills a dragon or whatever. Ridiculous.
Yeah, that's the whole dragons thing. They make it out like dragons are a big deal, but it's like there are several monsters that can kill you way more effectively than a dragon does. Like, dragons are not by any stretch the most terrifying enemy in this game. It's kind of funny since they're the big focus, but... Although I guess you are kind of genetically engineered to kill dragons, so there's that. But anyway, yeah, I've put like 10 hours into it so far. It's great. You can't, or maybe you can and I just haven't found out how to do it yet, but there's not really any quick select. As far as I can tell. Like, you have to go in and manually reassign spells and whatnot.
Yeah.
As far as I've been able, it just feels kind of clunky. Like, there's a lot of times, because there's so many different schools of magic, right? There's, like, conjuring and illusion and destruction and whatever. There's, like, five of them. And to switch between spells is just really clunky. So most of the time I just end up using, like, destruction, because it's not worth pausing the game, going in and assigning a buff spell, casting it, then going back and switching back to my offensive spells again. It takes too long and it's not worth it in the end. Although I guess that's the peril of playing like a magic-based character anyway.
Well, on the console at least you can select favorites.
Yeah, there's that, and I really like, we have this giant number bar on a keyboard. There's 10 different keys that you could assign stuff to in Oblivion. And, you can't here. So it's just, I mean, the favorites helps, definitely, but it's not the same as having like a giant quick select.
True.
Which thus far is really kind of my only issue with it. I've died a couple times because of non-existent checkpointing, but guess what? It's a Bethesda game. That's my own stupid fault because I'm an idiot who never saves. Like, you can't really blame that on the game after a certain point. So yeah, it's pretty good. It's Oblivion times 10. Like, if you liked Oblivion, you've probably not wasting any time listening to this podcast because you're playing Skyrim. So yeah.
Well, from what I keep hearing, it's more like Elder Scrolls Fallout 3 or something like that. I know, from what I keep reading, there's more similarities with Fallout than there is with Oblivion.
I don't know that I'd say that at all. You can see where it's been influenced by Fallout. A lot of the UI stuff is very kind of reminiscent of that. The perks are definitely more Fallout. And it's got a stylish kill kind of system where, like, you know how in Fallout you'd randomly shoot a guy and it would slow-mo and zoom in?
Yeah.
It's kind of got that, but I never use...
It's not as annoying, though.
no, it's not nearly as annoying. It actually looks really cool. And it's kind of one reason why I'm bummed that I'm not playing a character who uses swords, because that's really the only thing it does it for, is like swords and weapons.
Yeah, and it's also...
shoot magic at dudes.
Sorry.
No, let's carry on.
And it's also just not the kill in slow motion like in Fallout, but usually it's some kind of special action that's happening, like impaling someone with your sword or chopping the head off, stuff like that.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah,
yeah,
cool.
It's definitely exaggerated. And this game's a whole lot more kind of, what's the word? Brutal, I guess I would say, than Oblivion was. Like,
nice.
It's definitely bloodier.
That's not a bad thing, in my opinion.
No, it's not. I'm just saying that's one distinction. Like, it's Oblivion was T-rated, and this is definitely definitely M-rated.
Yep, understood.
So, yeah, I mean, I guess that's everything I have to really say about it, unless there's anything else you guys want to know.
I was going to say, well, we have that little break. The voice you kept on hearing talking to Chad is Martin, who joined us during that discussion. And I don't know if I was paying attention. Did you mention what class you were playing as?
Well, there aren't really any strict classes, per se. The whole character creation system's a little bit different. You don't... Like, in Oblivion, you'd pick your star sign, and you'd pick your class, and that governs what skills raise quickly and what skills don't. And it's kind of really not that at all. You just, I think your base stats aren't based on a class, because you don't pick a class at any point. But I think when you pick your race, certain races get certain bonuses to certain areas, just initially, and then after that, all skills kind of increase at the same pace.
Okay.
But then you can, put on different clothing that will increase the rate at which some things increase. I didn't say increase enough there.
Yeah.
So right now I'm wearing, a necklace thing that will make magic stats increase quicker since I'm playing a magic character. So it's not, built into like class selection so much as it's just more dynamic.
Okay.
And then your star signs, which confer different bonuses as well in Oblivion, you just, there's a area where there's like totems in the ground, and you actually just walk up to whichever one you want. You say, okay, I want this to be my astrology sign now, and it'll give me these bonuses or whatever, and then you can kind of change it at any time you want. So you're not really locked into anything. It feels a lot more free-flowing, I would say.
It's actually pretty much like... I, for some reason, I remember Morrowind more than Oblivion. I don't really know why, but it's the same system where you basically learn by doing. So whatever you do the most, that stat increases the most.
That makes more sense to me instead of just saying, oh, wait, I want this, this, and this. Because you're going to end up doing it, so you may as well level up.
Basically, your character adapts to how you play.
I was about to say, that caters more to your taste instead of like an RPG, right? If you're a physical person and then you're forced to upgrade your magic, that really doesn't help you if you don't use your magic that often. Is there anything else you wanted to add, Martin, before we moved on? Everybody signed
up. I will say it took me exactly 30 seconds to get distracted from the main quest. I went thistle hunting and it was great.
So yeah, what were you saying now, Martin, while you were being cut off or breaking up or whatever?
Only thing I said was basically that I'm only like 5 hours in. It's a great game. If you like Oblivion or Morrowind, this will be lots of fun for you.
Okay. That's Skyrim. I assume you don't have Modern Warfare 3?
I have Modern Warfare 3.
Do you? Tell us about that fantastic game.
Best game ever in the world.
No, it's not. It's not the best game in the world.
How dare you, sir?
I have to say, I was big Call of Duty fan up until Modern Warfare 2. That game basically sucked all the excitement out of the series for me. But now I return for some reason. I don't know. I buy the game every year, and usually, basically, since Modern Warfare 2, I'm only like, this sucks. And then I sell it a week later.
So you've bought the game for 2 years, even though you admit to yourself that you don't enjoy it anymore. Just to see if you still enjoy it.
Exactly. That's what I did.
It's hard, to be fair, it's hard not to buy it. I said from the start that I'm not going to get Modern Warfare 3. It's just not happening, but it's still tempting. I don't actually have the money, which is fortunate, because that's what is stopping me right now, is that I don't have the money to get it. But I'm still tempted to get it when I have money. Simply because everyone else is playing it. Unless you look at Steam stats and then everyone's playing Skyrim instead.
So I guess...
definitely intrigued by it. Like, I kind of want to just play through the main story to see how crazy it gets. But I'm not interested in the multiplayer at all, which is 90% of the reason why people are into that. So I'll just wait until it gets really, really cheap.
carry on.
Nope, it's fine.
All right, well, what I keep hearing is that the single player is like only 2 to 3 hours long, which I know they keep getting shorter and shorter and everything, but that's kind of disappointing because I usually play games for the single player more than anything else. The last Call of Duty game I played was the first Modern Warfare. I liked it, but it was too short, so I decided not to buy any others. But when I it's 2 hours of play, man, $60 for 2 hours of first-person shooter gameplay of a game that's probably the same as the one I bought like 3 years ago? Nah, doesn't sound compelling to me.
And I'm done.
You can go on, Martin.
What I was going to say real quickly before he goes on is I think the thing is Call of Duty won't change the single-player aspect because they don't have any reason to. If you continue to sell 15, 20 million each version and everybody's giving you high reviews even though your single-player game is kind of wonky, what's the point of investing into this if you don't really see a return? Like, what is a really fast-out single-player going to give them an extra 1 or 2 million? It won't make that big of a difference in the brand.
Even me, someone who actually can play first-person shooters online, I have no interest in it because it seems to me now that the game is just about how much shit you can drop out of the sky instead of actually running around and killing people. And, you know, people have said to me, oh, there are counters for that. You can just equip 2 perks and a rocket launcher as your side weapon. I shouldn't have to give up that much just so I can stop having shit drop out of the sky on top of my head, you know? And, the culture that Call of Duty creates and the multiplayer is just ridiculous. People complain about the camping when the game is designed around camping. Otherwise, there wouldn't be these stupid things that you could drop out of the sky. Somebody said to me, oh, it plays like Call of Duty 4, and I said, no, it doesn't, because every footage, all the footage I see of the multiplayer, it's people calling in airstrikes and plopping turrets onto the ground. That's not Call of Duty 4. Call of Duty 4 is actually killing people yourself. And I'm just, I don't know, I'm done. I don't care if all of my friends are playing it anymore. I can be the sort of the pretentious, oh, I don't like Call of Duty person. It's just not fun anymore. You know, I like first-person shooters where I can turn around and I can say to myself, I killed that guy because I outskilled him, or he killed me because he outskilled me. Not, he saw me first, so obviously he was going to win.
Well, I mean, if he saw you first, it should be an advantage. But
you can have an advantage over somebody when you see them first, but if you outskill them, you can win. Whereas in Call of Duty, you have no chance whatsoever.
which is kind of heroic. If somebody spots you first, they're going to shoot you.
Yeah, but Call of Duty isn't real life. I don't play video
it's
games.
It's gone for the realistic
angle. Otherwise, I would play Battlefield and have torches that are brighter than the sun.
But, yeah, we're still getting off the track of what Mario was talking about. Go on.
So I guess I should talk a bit more about the game because I'm the only one who actually played it.
Yeah.
Let's talk about single player. If you're into it for the single player campaign, don't buy it now. Plain and simple. The single player campaign took me around...
12 months when it's...
Buy it in 12 months or something when it's like $20 or something like that. Because the single player campaign took me 4 hours and I think... It might be one of the worst in the whole series. And I think the problem might be the development of the game because, I don't know how many people are aware of it because there are like 4 studios involved with the game and the campaign kind of feels like it was a bit rushed. It feels even more guided than any other Call of Duty game before. Basically, it's most of the time just really narrow corridor, no way to approach situations in different ways. And most of the time, you're running behind someone who has a follow me sign above him.
Are you able to open any doors?
No.
Well, then, there you go. I'm not playing this simple single player because I fell for that in Homefront. In Homefront, there's only one door that you can open yourself, and that's just I'm not doing that.
And
I shouldn't be able to judge a single player campaign of a game based on how many doors you can open in it, for God's sake.
And it also felt like 1/3 of the game was torrent sequences. There are so many sequences where just behind the torrent and shooting at guys and doing nothing more. I wasn't a big fan of the Battlefield 3 campaign, which I also thought was kind of crappy. And this is almost on the same level. So, yeah. But if you are into Call of Duty, for the multiplayer, I think this is almost a return to form. You said you don't like having shit flying around, stuff like that. I don't think from the games I played so far, and I put like 20 hours into the multiplayer, I think at this point there's actually less stuff flying around, probably because of the support and specialist packages. The specialist package basically lets you select your standard 3 perks and then 3 more perks. And then when you kill guys, you kill, I think, 2 guys, when you get unlock another perk, then next 2 kills, you get your 5th perk. Another 2 kills, you get your 6th perk. And then, if you kill another 2 or 3 guys, you basically unlock all perks the game has.
This sounds very OP to me. And the only thing that doesn't sound OP is the support strike package, because you don't actually kill anything with your kill streaks.
Yeah, and the support package is also cool, because you get stuff like... an anti-air turret, which you can plant somewhere, which shoots stuff automatically out of the air, so you don't have to use a rocket launcher. There's also stuff like bullet vests that you can put down and your whole team can take. It has some solutions for stuff people don't enjoy about Black Ops or... probably also Modern Warfare 2, which I think is great. And the Spec Ops mode is also great fun. They added this kind of horde mode where you can play with 2 players, and basically they throw all
just
kinds
2.
Of different enemies at you. Sorry?
Is it just 2 players? Can you not have 4-player co-op?
That's the only complaint. It's just two players.
Yeah, that's disappointing.
Which I don't really understand. But it's also really cool because they also put like a leveling system in there so you can unlock different weapons and between waves. So basically by killing guys, you get money, and between waves, then you can buy better weapons or buy perks or buy airstrikes. And you also need all that stuff because you are getting hammered by juggernauts, which are these huge guys with very heavy armor.
The bullish ones, basically.
Yeah, or dogs with C4 packed on them and stuff like that. So that's also great fun.
But I bet you said you weren't having fun with this game.
Not with a single player.
But you're enjoying the multiplayer.
So yeah, the multiplayer is fun again. The multiplayer is fun again. The problem was Modern Warfare 2 was kind of broken with boosters and stuff like that. Black Ops, on the other hand, was just very plain because they took a lot of stuff out. And this is a return to form, I think, with the multiplayer. The only complaint I might still have is that the weapon damage is very high, which results in sometimes if you have some latency issues, it is just, I saw you first, you're dead. I don't know if maybe they will fix that on the line with patches and maybe softening the weapons a bit. I don't know. We will see.
Okay. So you're going to keep this one?
Yes. This is the keeper, at least if you're into multiplayer.
Okay. And then finally, I guess I've been playing Super Mario 3D Land since last night anyhow. I'm like 4 worlds in. And, you know, I've mentioned it before, I was kind of iffy on this game coming in because it had a kind of meh debut at E3, and even my hands-on time with it at New York Comic Con, where you didn't sell me on the game. But I think it's one of those games you just have to sit down and play, and then it kind of kicks with you. I mean, it's a Mario game through and through. You can tell that it's kind of... I know the Falcon 9 is like a weird mixture of like 2D and 3D Mario, but it really does have that type of sensibility where it's not as zany or as creative, I think, as the Galaxy games, where the Galaxy games you can do like 15 different stuff each time you go for one star. This is pretty much like, it's a, you know, each world has like one theme and that runs throughout it, but you know, it's every stage has something different going on. So you get that in the creativity, and it's a pretty linear path. You know, you go from point A to point B, but you have some, you know, some freedom to free roam and stuff like that to pick up the star coins, which has become tradition with Mario games recently. The star coins are really the challenge of the game. Like trying to get item in one stage really does sometimes tests your ability to see what's going on the screen and also the time you jumps and stuff like that. I've seen a lot of reviews that said that this is the game that proves 3D is the proof of concept. You know, it's the game that proves that. And I don't necessarily agree with that yet. I think the game makes a great use of 3D, but I think it does it more by cheating perspectives than it does by saying, like, this is awesome. This is what we needed 3D for. Where, like, I mean, they're very good with it, where they'll have stuff on, like, similar planes. But if you don't have 3D on, like, you won't realize that maybe one's in the foreground, one's in the background, one's hiding the other. Because, you know, on a 2D plane, it kind of looks the same, but 3D, you can kind of tell the difference. And, it helps you judge jump distance and stuff. The same hand, you can just watch Mario's shadow, and you pretty much have a good idea of where you're going to land anyhow. So far, if I had to...
So was you wrong to doubt Nintendo?
I mean, I think it's always wrong to doubt a Mario game, but, you know, it is possible for it to be a, like I said, when it reviews, I was actually surprised. I expected this to be a 08 game, and then a lot of people gave it 9s and 10s, so there's that. But,
well, if you rate something an 8, you're rating it the wrong. That means it's a bad game.
Well, for most people, for me, I thought this was going to be a good game, but an average Mario game, which, I mean, still has the capabilities of doing that, but Yeah, I think my biggest complaints right now are, I mean, I understand why, but the stages are really short. I find that I've only completed 3 worlds completely, but I find it's kind of the boss battles, and this is kind of a thing with Mario games in general, are kind of like, so far it's Bowser's the boss in World 1, and just like, you know, like a homage to Super Mario Brothers, it's not actually Bowser, it's actually a Goomba with a Tanuki tail inside of a Bowser costume, I guess. And then World 2 and 3 had airships as their final bosses, and then those bosses were boom booms or whatever you want to call them, because technically it's not a boom boom if it spins around in a circle. And yeah, that's pretty, you know, it's been that same structure. And there's not a lot of, I mean, I guess it depends. There's not a lot of stages per world. I mean, if you go back to like the Super Mario Brothers route, it makes sense. It's 1 to 4. Here it's more like you get 5 and then like a boss stage usually. So, you know. But from what I hear, it's because they do open up a lot of content once you actually beat the game. So there's that. There's some interesting puzzle rooms, I guess, which aren't really, so far aren't really puzzle rooms. Usually, it's like it's on the map. You go into this room and you have like 10 or 15 seconds to figure it out to get the star coin. Usually, it's like kill these 2 enemies and they'll give you like a fire flower or a Tanuki tail to do that. And then you'll get that, and then you just run around and compete it in time. And that's also the stuff that, I guess, gets transferred over in the Street Pass when you use that feature.
Okay.
Other than that, I mean, I think the game looks great. Nintendo, you know, Mario has that nice, clean, I mean, it's simple look, but it works for the franchise. It always has. And it really does make stuff stand out. There's some new enemies. I mean, at this point, you know, you have your usuals, you have your Goombas, your Troopers, your Twomps, your Bullet Bills, but there's some new ones. There's like the mini Twomps, which follow Mario around. They do one, like they do his motion, and the only way to get past them is you have to trick them to jump, and while they're in the air, you run past them, and that makes for some interesting puzzles and stuff like that. There's some nice visual tricks, you know, with the 3D, but in general. Like, there's one stage, which is reminiscent of the Galaxy games, where, like, there's different parts of the stage. One's, like, a giant Mario, and then it's a giant Luigi, there's a giant Princess Peach. And they're all done in, like, the 8-bit sprites of the original Super Mario Brothers games. That's kind of nifty. Yeah, music is catchy, as usual. I honestly don't remember much of it outside of the main theme, and that's partially because I've heard it everywhere. Like I was saying at the start of the podcast, I went to the Nintendo launch event for this in Times Square, and they had this huge like Mario Land setup where you can go on stage and you'll get to jump on stuff, and you'll grab the flagpole, and there's a side to go down, and then you can take your picture, and then they had a bunch of people dressed up as Mario's doing tricks and stuff, and they had that song playing throughout the entire event. I was there for like 3 hours, and that's the only song in the background. I will say this, and I've had this complaint about their other events before too. I get why they do it, but it's really a pain in the ass because it seems like you can do one or the other unless you get there really early. Like the event started at 10 o'clock in the morning, I got there at 10:20, and I had to wait in line for the activities for like an hour, and I decided not to because I was around 11:20 or something like that, and the game was only being sold from 12 to 2, so there's a 2-hour window to buy the actual game. And the event goes until 4, so you have to, it makes more sense to end up with a game first. But you can't do both, which is what my issue is if you're not there early, because, like, by the time you get off the line for the activity, you're gonna be in the far back of the line for the video game.
Yeah, that sounds terrible. So,
I mean, at the end, I ended up getting what I came for. I got my Tanuki tail and ears, so that's all I really wanted. So there's that. I mean, I'll have more when I actually get through the game. It seems like it's, at least the first part of it won't be that difficult. Like I said, I completed like the first world on my train ride home, which is like 45 minutes. So I think that's it. I guess anybody else has been playing anything this past week?
I have been playing something new, but I can't tell you about it because otherwise the developers will kill me and my friends and my family for breaking a certain agreement that I made. But it's a good game. Whatever game it is, it's good.
Is this Star Wars?
No.
What other game is coming out this year?
It's a lesser-known game, but it's still... I still can't say anything about it.
Oh, fair enough. I won't have you break your NPD.
You get to shoot people. Oh, that's all I can say. You get to shoot people.
Oh, that narrows it down to great in this industry. So yeah, I guess we're moving on to the big news of the week and stuff like that. And we'll start off with October NPD data. You know, it's an interesting October for the most part. I mean, I think general software sales were up, which is good, but that was kind of expected. We had Battlefield 3, which was pegged as this huge game. And I think Battlefield is a bigger brand than Medal of Honor Wars last year, so there's that. Batman Arkham City, I don't really think we had anything that equivalent of that last year. Rage, Dark Souls, which actually charted, I was surprised by that. Frozen, which I didn't even know came out. And I think I'm sure there were other games that came out in October. Like, everybody says it's a huge year for gaming, and I'm drawing a blank on what actually came out
in
October.
That's because it's all November, that's why.
I am really kind of curious to see November's NPD data. I want to see the top 10. I'm kind of curious if Uncharted makes it. But yeah, the 360 sales continue to go up and up. I mean, it is the first system I can think of that has actually shown more life at the end of its life cycle than it has at the start or even the middle of it. It's had the best, I guess, last 18 months of any console in quite some time. Well, it's not doing as well as we at the start of the generation, but it's doing much better than the Xbox 360 at the start of this generation.
Yeah.
PS3 remains, I don't know what Sony has to do really. I mean, they've released like 100 games this year. They've dropped the price $50. They bundle it with, I mean, I think there's an Infamous 2 bundle. There's a Uncharted 3 bundle. I think they've had a Resistance bundle or a Killzone bundle sometime this year. I mean, I guess at this point they're just going to have to wait until like, they're sub 200, but like even the sales drop and, you know, new accessories and stuff like that haven't really boosted the sale that much. It's doing well, but it's not doing anything special. It's selling about the same as last year, so you would expect a bit higher after $50. I mean, $50, I think a lot of people pegged wasn't enough of a price drop. And I guess the proof is in the pudding at this point.
Yeah.
So yeah, does anybody else have anything to say?
Well, I'm surprised Rage sold that much. I don't think its software had like that much staying power or relevance these days.
Well, I mean, I guess it's all relative because I mean a lot of people. I mean, what is it, 550,000 between two systems?
Yeah, and then this is not including the PC, which I'm pretty sure would add a lot to it.
Well, I mean, that's hard to say. I mean, I guess it's a pretty game, but a lot of things say that, and then like the PC sales aren't that much. I mean, usually the PC sales are worse than the console sales. I mean, there's some exceptions to that rule, but it seems to be the rule most of the time that the console version does better.
PC's more still a fairly niche thing because of the high entry price.
Well, I mean, PC. Well, I guess high entry if you want to pay it, but a lot of people, they have a PC, it plays video games, they try it. I think that's the thing with PC gaming is a lot of people. It's just, I mean, with consoles, you buy an Xbox 360. Any game you buy for the Xbox 360 is going to work for your Xbox 360 for the most part. Or your PS3 or your Wii. You buy a PC, it doesn't necessarily mean that a game you buy is going to work for it or it's compatible with it. It becomes a headache for a lot of people.
Yeah.
I guess I'm going to have to agree with that, but I actually did like Rage, but not too much. Like, near the end, it kind of got a little shitty with one of the worst endings of all time. Anyone can tell you, anyone who played Rage is like, what the fuck was that? But in the end, it started off good, had a good foundation. I wouldn't mind a sequel, I guess, or something using the same engine, because the engine was really good, actually. But, yeah, I was surprised by that. And Dark Souls, which is a pleasant surprise for me, actually.
Yeah, that was actually a surprise, too. But, again, you know, go multi-platform. I mean, I think NPD format does favor multi-platform games, because, you know, it's easier to sell when you're on 2, 3, 4 consoles instead of being a single console thing or breaking it down by platform. I'm sure October would do pretty similar, but, you know, there'd be less room if you had to break up Battlefield and NBA 2K12 and Batman Arkham City.
Yeah.
But yeah, and you know, and I'm assuming it's going to be the same thing with November, where games like Assassin's Creed and, well, Modern Warfare is another thing, but you know, like Assassin's Creed, or actually, I think Assassin's Creed is the biggest multi-platform game this month, not counting Modern Warfare. I could be mistaken, though. So yeah, there's that. Moving on, I guess. In sales department, we had figures that Uncharted 3's originally sold 3.8 million units on its opening day, which would put it in line as, I think, probably the fourth or fifth best opening for a video game franchise ever.
I'm not surprised, to be honest. Because, well, although we are talking about a PS3 game, it is Uncharted, and, you know, there are going to be a lot of people out there that, although we did say that Uncharted isn't really a system seller, that Uncharted is not an unknown, it's not a franchise you only know of if you have a PS3, let's put it that way.
Yeah, and this is why I took issues with the number, and I take issues with this whole, I understand why from a business standpoint, but it gets really confusing when you throw that out there, because a lot of people tend to listen to the news that best suits their worldview. So yeah. If you see that Uncharted sold 3.8 million in its opening day, you're going to go with that no matter what the evidence goes against, because that's what you want to believe. And I have Uncharted. I've said it before, and I always feel bad because I always say that, just because I'm going to say a point, is that I don't like an increase in Uncharted 3 to sell 3.8 million in its opening day is unheard of. I mean, in the States alone, that would be more than 100% gain from the opening month of Uncharted 2.
Yeah.
Not opening day, not opening week, opening month. And I mean, even Call of Duty doesn't see 100% increase in its opening day performance. And for Uncharted to go from, what is it? I think it's sold. I mean, we have figures too. It sold, what, 125, I think, 1,000 in Japan, which is great. It's its highest selling game in it. But that was an increase of like 30%. It had an increase of like 36% in the UK. That's a bit more reasonable than saying, you know, you had over 100% increase in your sales from Uncharted 2. So yeah, as it came out, because people were harping on the story a bit longer than it needed to be, it actually was Sony shipped. And I'm sure at the end of the day, Uncharted 2 ended up selling, 4.9 million or something like that. So, I mean, 3.8 wouldn't be that difficult to sell, but I just don't think that would be its open. I don't even think that's its opening week's number, so there's that. On the flip side, and one I actually do believe, because honestly, at this point, who doesn't? Call of Duty sold 6.3 million in its opening day.
And it goes to show that you shouldn't believe anything the VG chart says.
I'd never believe anything the VG chart says. Because what is the VG chart?
VG said 9.3, wasn't it?
Something like
that.
And I
was like,
so,
get away, was it 9.3?
And again, word spreads and people start using that as gospel. I've always found the use of VG charts to be rather funny, because most people realize that VG charts is crap.
Yeah.
I use VG charts as a benchmark going backwards, because they do tend to update as new information comes in. I would never use it for new games. But if it fixed the narrative that you want to tell, people are all for using that number. But the instant it doesn't match up with what you want to believe or what you want to happen is when you realize, oh, that number's bunk. But yeah, 6.3 million, I think. It's like some site increase, like 17% or something from Black Ops, which I think was like 5.6 million opening day. Something like that. But we've already kind of harped on Modern Warfare 3 a bit for today. Next up, I guess, we had first footage of Alan Wake for Xbox Live Arcade.
That was a little disappointing for me. I was hoping for Alan Wake 2, but I didn't get it. And I'm not sure an Xbox Live Arcade game is going to be that good, to be honest with you.
Well, I thought we've known for a while that the next Alan Wake game was going to be like an arcade title.
Yeah, I was just hopeful, thinking, like, just like me sitting around, like, I hope it's Alan Wake 2. I know it's not, probably not going to be that. I just hope it is. Then when it showed up that it wasn't the Xbox Live Arcade, I was like, all right, fuck it. I'm probably going to download this, beat this, and forget about it.
I think the main problem with Xbox Live Arcade nowadays is it's such a congested thing. We know that, like, small downloadable titles are more better off the developers because they obviously they spend less money and they can make games quicker. But I know it's just easier to throw away a game because it's on Xbox Live Arcade. And there's so many Xbox Live releases every week now. There's, like, what, something stupid like three a week when it's supposed to be just one. It's just...
Yeah.
There's only so many downloadables you can take.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it does. I mean, and this is a problem I think the entire industry has to face going forward. I mean, I think Steam does a good job of it because they have those sales and they usually come, you know, like people are more willing to try a game they never heard of if it's $5-$10. And Xbox Live does the sales as well.
They're not Steam sales.
I was going to say there's so many games on Xbox Live Arcade that it's just...
And then the main issue with Xbox Live Arcade is it's hard to find a game. You can't... if it's not one of the ones that comes up in the top downloads or the top rated, then it's going to be... It's really hard for people to find it. So they need to sort that out before they... Before, like... Because there are now so many... Yeah... Because now there's so many, and there need to be genres as well, because it's getting so congested that it's getting really hard to find what you're looking for, unless it is one of the more popular titles.
Well, I'm kind of curious to see how this goes next gen, because I'm assuming that Microsoft is going to keep a lot of these games going forward, if nothing else, so that people who actually do own them can re-download them when they buy the next Xbox. But if you have a store that already has 200-400 games in it, it's gonna be really confusing trying to find anything in that. Unless they do like how they have games on the man and they're on the have like Xbox Live Arcade Retro, which is like Xbox Live titles from this generation and then do something else the next gen.
Well, I actually kinda like Xbox Live Arcade just for the games they usually offer, but in the end, I don't want to, like, use this as a metric for future games I buy, but once you go from actual retail release game, as in $50, $60 in all, to Xbox Live Arcade game, it's kind of a downgrade for the developer a little bit. Like, because I was hoping for a full-fledged sequel, and now I'm getting, like, a spin-off. It could hold me over until there's a sequel, but... That spin-off doesn't even do well. What's the chances I'm going to get a sequel?
Well, I was going to say that's why I would actually be happy, because if I'm not mistaken, the original Alan Wake didn't do that well, which is probably why they went with a sequel. I mean, why they did a small arcade title ahead of time instead of doing anything else first.
Exactly.
I guess. Carry on.
Oh, so we all went quiet there. Okay. we also saw that BioWare has a new IP in the works. Honestly, I didn't really get much from that picture.
I thought it looked like another
single-player game.
It's not going to be a single-player game, you said?
Yeah, because this is EA we're talking about. They need an excuse to put an online pass in it.
If anything, they can learn from Rocksteady that you don't need online to have an online pass. Just like our single player content.
But it will be online.
Eh.
Yeah, I mean, he's right. EA, I don't know, I think Riccatello said like a few months ago, every game from us from now on will be online.
In some capacity.
Yeah, so it will be.
It's an unhealthy obsession, unfortunately.
It is,
but
yeah.
It's the way EA does things.
I don't know if it's unhealthy, I mean...
What do you mean, you don't know if it's unhealthy? It is unhealthy, because you can't...
It gives them money.
But it doesn't, as we've seen. It doesn't, because the online passes don't make them that much money.
Another sought-after Origin exclusive, eh?
Yeah.
Yes.
Pretty much.
Hey, which means it can come to the Wii U, apparently, if rumors are true to be believed. But,
I can't see a Nintendo looking to a company like EA. I just can't see it.
We don't usually talk about rumors, so I won't talk about this on air, but we'll get to that later. Collector's Edition of Final Fantasy 13-2 was announced this week. I don't know what's in it. It's Final Fantasy 13.
I'm listening.
I'm kind of curious.
Is the collector's edition the one where you don't get a shit game?
Hey, no, fuck you, no. Final Fantasy was great.
Yeah, and then they made a 13th one.
I thought it went downhill to heaven. But, yeah, I don't know what's in it exactly, because honestly, I'm not going to buy it. Let's see, what do you get with this?
Oh, wait, no, yeah, I think I did read this. It's nothing too crazy. It's just like an book and a 4-part soundtrack, I believe.
Yeah. So, okay, it's not that bad. It's only, what, $20 more?
And $20 that I will pay because I'm ridiculous.
You're a Final Fantasy IV, you can
say. I'll sit here and say I won't, because right now I plan not to. But that's not going to happen.
Well, okay. If you get the soundtrack, what's the point of buying the game then?
That is true.
I'm sorry, I just like the sounds.
Haters.
I honestly haven't paid. I actually got Final Fantasy 13 this week to finally play it to see what all the fuss is about. I figured if everybody else hates it, I might enjoy it because I hate every other Final Fantasy game. And people seem to love those, so it might work. We'll find out.
I'm just very interested to see how well 13.2 will do. Because I think a lot of people were burned on 13, me included. I am not planning to buy 13.2 because I didn't even finish 13.
that was the point I wanted to make, is that they announced 13.2, they're selling 13.2, they're doing a collector's edition. But I'm kind of curious to see, because it's not the most popular game in the franchise, and they're doing a direct sequel to it, and I don't think a lot of people cared for the world. They didn't care for the gameplay, and they're continuing that. And it's going to be like the GTA 4, the Austin of the Dams, Battle of Gay Tony type deal, where people didn't finish the main game, or people didn't like the main game, so they're not going to buy the add-on or the sequel or whatever they want to call it.
But at least those were kind of standalone and worked on their own. I don't think that will be the case with 13.2.
Yeah, well, I'm going to have to agree with Martin. Like, I didn't even buy 13. I got the chance to play at my cousin's house. And like most Final Fantasies, the soundtrack was cool, the graphics were cool, everything else was just putrid crap. The gameplay was just weird. The voice acting was like, damn, my ears are bleeding from that shit. And everything about it just annoyed me. It just showed me everything I hate about Final Fantasy. It showed me what little I still love about it. So I was like, yeah, I'm probably not buying the sequel. Sorry.
Well, they have to make a sequel to it, really. I mean, they put so much money into that engine. Like, they have to try to make it work somehow.
God forbid try and use it on a different franchise.
To be fair, people have a lot of complaints about Final Fantasy 13, and whether I agree with the legitimacy of those complaints or not, a lot of it is stuff that's kind of easy to fix.
Like, I guess.
This is a bit off topic. But the problems that people had with Final Fantasy 13 were existent in Final Fantasy 10, and yet nobody hated that game.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like, I can have faith. I can have faith in 13.2, knowing that the things that people had a problem with in 13, they were very vocal about. So Square knows. So in theory, they could fix all that stuff, and it could be great.
Well, in theory, this could be the case, but still, it's an RPG. It's very story-based. Why should I care about the second game when I've not finished the first one?
I have to agree with that. And plus, we're not sure if they'll be capable of HD towns this time or not.
shouldn't that be known? The game's out in, what, 2 months?
What?
No.
It's out in January or February, is it not?
Wait, I'm not sure that's true.
I'll check, man. February release date.
I'm gonna check it out, man, right now. I'm gonna check it out on the net. And if it is, this is pretty surprising. Like, what?
I'll actually be stoked if that's the case, cause that's awesome.
Yeah, I guess so.
I'm pretty sure we talked about it when it was announced a couple of weeks ago. It's out January 31st.
What? Fuck.
Jesus.
So, Yeah, I'm surprised not a lot of information is known about that if it's out in like 2 months, 2.5 months.
Holy crap, it is.
I think it's mainly because we're used to getting a Final Fantasy game once every like 5 years.
That's nowadays. Not true though.
Disregarding 14 and disregarding.
Yeah, I mean between 12 and 13, but between 7 and 12, there's not that huge of a gap, is there?
I think 12 took a while, but that's about it. Like 7, 8, 9 were like a year apart each, right?
Yeah. And then 10 came out in 2001, so it was like 2 years after 9, and then it kind of got iffy with 11 and 12. But yeah, it's not like you have this huge precedent where Final Fantasies take that long. I think that probably longer in the gap. Maybe like one came out in early 97, one came out in 98 or something like that. But they didn't take that long before, because there's three of them on the PlayStation, and there's three of them on the PS2 era, and that's about 5.5 years each.
Let's just hope they finish up Versus 13, because I'm pretty sure that's not coming out till PlayStation 4.
That's what confuses me. Final Fantasy Versus 13 was announced the same time as Final Fantasy 13, and 13 comes out, and 13 gets a direct sequel before we see anything new on Final Fantasy Versus 13.
Yeah, I don't understand it either. And that's actually the game I am interested in, because that actually looks cool.
I agree, like, that game actually looks pretty cool. It uses the best out of Kingdom Hearts with some cool shit from, what's his name, the Zipper guy, and the other guys, and it looks pretty cool, and the scans were nice. The few moments or the few footage of gameplay we actually saw, like, earlier this year, I'm sure, like, near January, was pretty good, but we're not getting it, and I'm not seeing a release date anytime soon, which really sucks. It really sucks.
Maybe Square saw that people were excited about one of their games and decided not to release. It's the same thing with the Final Fantasy VII remake.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
One of these days, I'll go a week without hearing about the Final Fantasy VII remake.
No, you won't. The only time you'll hear about the Final Fantasy VII remake is when it eventually does get made and people are asking.
No, because I still want to hear about it.
As an age, as well as they thought, because most games from 15 years ago don't.
Oh, dear.
Especially games that's had something like 6 sequels since then.
Yeah, Crisis Core, Advent Children, the Director's Cut. Whatever the hell's that cell phone game. Dear Lord, that game got more sequels and spin-offs than any other game, and they're still bitching about a remake. It's like how shitty these sequels were. Like, every sequel, except for maybe Crisis Core, was bad. They would have realized by now that Square's not gonna give them justice by the remake. You know what I mean?
I think Square played it perfectly. If somebody wants something really bad, you give them everything else related to it. Just so you tease them enough so that they buy it, then hope that motivates you to get it done. It's the same thing, I think Ubisoft announced this, that if you buy Rayman Origins, it's going to help Beyond Good and Evil 2 get made.
All I want is more Rayman games. I don't want Beyond Good and Evil, so whatever.
But yeah, Rayman Origins, I mean that's out this week, but the demo's fantastic.
It is, even I liked it, and I'm not really a fan of platformers.
Oh, it's beautifully drawn. It has some fantastic music, great platforming, co-op that's hit or miss, from my experience. Only because of what I played at New York Comic Con, and I think playing video games standing up is really difficult to really gauge them, especially when you're playing with a bunch of strangers who have no idea what to do either.
I got to play with my brother, and it's good fun. I like it a lot. It's really fun. And I hear it's like 60-plus levels, and what else? Well, 4-player co-op. I think there's online co-op. I'm not sure, though. And, yeah, it looks fun. It's really fun. I was not going to buy it. I was going to wait down the line for a price drop, but now I'm probably going to buy it day one.
Well, I'm still going to wait for a price drop just because, and I think Ubisoft is kind of stupid with this, is that it's coming out the same time as like 100 other games this week.
And another Ubisoft game too. Assassin's Creed's coming out the same day, and it's a bigger Ubisoft game. So yeah.
Oh,
go on.
Come end of the year and Game of the Year awards, Rayman Origins will be one of those games where everyone will say, yeah, I meant to play that.
Yeah, I think so. I've said it before, it's one of the games that's most hurt by its launch date. Partially because I think the platforming niche is kind of filled with this Mario release this week. And then the fact that it's just kind of covered by all these other AAA releases, Assassin's Creed, it has the Halo Combat Evolved remake, there's Saints Row the Third. So, you know, there's always that stigma with platformers, and this one does look like an actual cartoon. So yeah, I really wish they would release this in like January or February of next year. I think it would do much better then. But we shall see. Let's hope for the best.
I still don't know why almost nobody is releasing anything in December.
Yes.
December is kind of a dead month.
Yeah, I think the general thinking of December is that everybody wants their game out before Black Friday. Because that's when people do the bulk of their shopping. I mean, it tends to be why Nintendo releases their game that Sunday, is that you get that push, the opening push, but you also get a bunch of advertisements for Black Friday because you're the newest game on the market. But yeah, let's be honest,
Black Friday is just an American thing.
It is.
Kind of.
This industry tends to cater to America. As far as taste, I mean, I'm sure it caters to Japan too with Golden Week and stuff like that. But yeah, because I think the only two games off the top of my head that are out this December are Mario Kart 7, which honestly can come out in the middle of nowhere and still do well.
True.
And Star Wars, The Old Republic, which I think is out at Christmas week. So yeah, I'm actually writing up an article about this today. I just decided, and this will be up by the time the podcast is up. I was thinking about this the other day. So we have so many games coming out this Tuesday and this week in general. If you count, you know, Skyrim this Friday, Mario Sunday, this, and then Zelda next Sunday. So I just decided to look at the top 20 games of this generation to see, just to get a general consensus of when they're released. And I mean, most of them are released in November. I think 8 of the 20, and 4 of them are Call of Duty games. Which is the other thing with a lot of November releases in the last 4 or 5 years. Like, Call of Duty takes a lot of sales. But yeah, basically, the best time to release games, based on my findings, seems to be April and May, because
Rockstar does.
Well, that's not necessarily true, because there's five games that were released in April. I believe four of them are Nintendo games.
I think August is also a pretty good month, at least if your game releases before Madden.
Yeah, well, you see, this varies, because Madden was out September this year. That was partially because of the football strike. But yeah. And this is the thing, July is the worst month for video games. I can't think of a single, StarCraft 2 last year, I think. And I think Wii Sports Resorts was July release. I can't think of any other game that's come out in July in the last 5 or 6 years.
Hmm.
I mean, yeah, you'll get some stuff in late May. You'll probably get some stuff around E3. Nobody likes to do that because it's a really awkward time when you have that E3 push. It's like, if it's too early, nobody talks about it at E3. If it's just out, nobody cares because it's out in 2 weeks. So they try to avoid June. But July is like dead. There's literally nothing that comes out in that month ever. And I'm sure, and looking at the schedule, the next 3 months in the new year, January, February, March, are really jam-packed. Final Fantasy 13 2, Mass Effect 3, what else is there? I think Kid Icarus is around that time. Maybe Luigi's Mansion. Twisted Metal's in that time frame. So there's a lot of games coming out in that general time again. And again, it's like everything that's out of November moves to January, February, March for some reason instead of spreading it out throughout the year.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is a subject for another day. We're actually over the hour mark, so I guess we can begin to wrap. Do you gentlemen have anything to plug?
My review of Halo CE should be up sometime in the week. I've gotten the email saying it's dispatched, so...
Okay, spoilers, he's really going to like it.
Well, I don't know. We don't know. It could be the worst game ever made.
Yes, it's a remake of a game that's so good that you're a huge fan of the franchise and you buy every game in it. That it's gonna be so bad that
it's not made by Bungie though. It's not made by Bungie.
Yeah, but as far as I know, it's mostly a graphical overhaul. It's not like a gameplay overhaul.
Well, you never know.
Fair enough.
Is it okay if I plug my buddy's website? Because I write reviews for him.
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
Yeah. It's called pixelatedmonster.com. We're just starting out with reviews. You can find my two Uncharted and Sonic Generations review. My buddy Ryan just had his rated review up. We're just starting out, so check the site out. We'd like some feedback, and thanks a lot for having me on this podcast.
Just one question. I can check this out. Like, what is your review format? Do you have like a grading scale or numerical?
Oh, yeah, it's about like out of 5. And there's a 0.5, like 4.5, 3.5, that kind of thing.
Then what, I mean, at that point, what's the difference between doing a 10-point scale?
I don't know. Like, I prefer a 10-point scale, but since it's my friend's website, and he usually prefers the 5-star one, I was like, I might as well roll with it. It's his site. And in the end, it pretty much says the same thing. If it gets a 5 out of 5,
Which is my point. Like, I can understand if you do like 1 out of 5, 2 out of 5, but if you're doing 4.5, you might as well do
that
a 10-point
scale.
Yeah, it's really confusing. I think there's a built-in problem. I mean, it's really hard with a 4 or 5-point scale because this is what Netflix uses, and sometimes you know, like a lot of my reviews, if I ever do Netflix, whenever I do that, it's like 3 or 4 stars because you know. It's just that middle ground with nothing's ever, it's really hard to say something's perfect, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's, you know, middle or average. So I like that middle ground, which is why the 10-point scale works, I guess.
Yeah, well, the thing is, I'm one of those people. I think there's like real few of us out there. Cause I'm probably the only one who ever sees it this way. I like the old review scale of like 9.1, 9.2, 9.3, 9.4, that thing. Cause it's not exactly the best, I know, but it helps me specify what game I like better, even if I review them like similarly, like 9.6, that this is a 9.7. But I think I'm the only one who thinks that way.
So. I think so.
Well, it just feels like way too specific to me, I think. Like,
yeah.
What is the difference between a 9.5
kind of
and a 9.6, really? Like,
yeah, that's
like,
the thing.
It's how do you tell a 0.1 difference for anything, right?
Yeah, I know, dude. I'm just very OCD about it, and I tend to prefer it. But I can see why a lot of people don't like it. But I don't know. That's why I said I'm the only one. Sorry, Earl. Keep going.
It's okay. I was going to say, it also depends on how you review. Because I think, and this is what I see with a lot of reviews as far as video game criticism goes, is that a lot of people always talk about, like, oh, you docked a point off of this for that and that. But, like, do people start off like, oh, this is going to be a 10 and then like, work down a check-in? Because to me, I don't start from 10 and then see how it's imperfect.
But that's how a lot of people think.
Yeah, I kind of start from the, you know, like, okay, you know, this
you
is
start
like
from
the base
1 and you work up.
Yeah, you kind of work up as to what this does good, not I start from 10 and see how this works bad, because it's hard to say what, like, oh, I'm going to dock a point because it doesn't have voice acting. I'm going to dock a point because it's only 4 hours. It doesn't really work that way. Maybe I should have a checklist on the site and just, like, dock points as we go along. It'll be, like, 0.1 for everything.
The weird thing is that I don't see 7 out of 10 as a bad score, which is another thing a lot of people don't seem to agree with me on. Like, if a game gets a 7-10, I'd try it out. If it gets an 8-10, I'd try it out.
It's
not
in the top 30% of games. Like, that's pretty good.
Yeah, but a lot of people seem
to
try
it. It's not in the top 30% of games. Because of the review skill, it's probably in the lower 50% of games. Which is, I think, the problem with this industry is that we're so used to... Like, I'm not saying there aren't amazing games. But there really shouldn't be 100 amazing games every year. It's just kind of awkward at some point.
Yeah.
Like, if every movie came out that was 5 stars, would you go see anything in cinemas?
No, like, I hardly give out any perfect scores myself, but the way I see it is that it's impossible to give 9 out of 10 to all those games. And one of the biggest people who do this all the time is, well, IGN. Every time I go and see a game that's at least a little bit hyped, chances are it's going to get a 9 out of 10, and that 9 out of 10 could be anything. It could actually be a 6 to most people, a 7. Like, Brutal Legend, I love that game, but I wouldn't give it a 9. It's like a 7 or a 6 because of all the RTS problems.
That's where the what's that word? Fuck.
Disconnect?
No. It's coming. Give me a second.
Why do you think about that? I mean, I was going to say, I think that's also a problem a lot of people have. It's like, there's a difference between loving something and realizing if it's objectively good.
Yes, objectiveness. No, the other one. What's not objective?
Subjective.
There we go. That one.
Yeah. Like, I can say that I've played a game and I've enjoyed it. Like, I will say I love it's like, but it's one of my favorite games this generation. I would never give it, I would probably give it in the mid sevens because it's a fun game, but it does, I mean, it's really basic. It does nothing really out of there, but it's a fun game. Objectively, I know it's not a 10 out of 10.
Yeah.
At the same hand, I can tell, you know, like Uncharted 3, I love it. We don't do review scores on the site because this gives me a headache just with the feedback people give with those things. But honestly, if I was to review it, I'd give it an 8 or an 8.5. Just because I feel it, well, and this is an issue that a lot of people have, like, you don't, you know, like, and this is another criticism I hate, and we're really going on about reviews now, is the notion that a review score is comparable to begin with, but also that every game should have the same criteria. If you criticize Uncharted for not doing anything new, but don't criticize Modern Warfare for doing it, it's not necessarily the same thing. I can understand why you would do that because on paper, you know, if one game's creatively bankrupt and the other one's creatively bankrupt, they should both be penalized for that.
That's kind
what
of
I would
the
have done is I would dock Call of Duty more because it's released more often and there are more games in the series.
Yeah, I think that's the thing that a lot of people, and this is really a discussion for another day. But yeah, I think that's the thing with people. It's like a Call of Duty not changing, I don't necessarily have an issue with, because at this point, that's what the fans want. If the fans wanted something radically different, they would buy everything else that comes out that's trying to improve Call of Duty. But the fact is that it comes out every year with minor changes. It really does wear thin after 4 or 5 years. That there's really no reason for them to justify releasing it every year other than wanting money.
I agree completely for the most part. And I still say, if I like a game, that does not mean it's a 10. Shadows of the Damned, one of my favorite games of the year. That's a 7 out of 10 at best, objectively. If I pick and nitpick every single thing about the game, it kind of has a lot of bad parts about it. But I still enjoy it a lot. So I agree with you guys.
I don't like the idea of rating anything objectively. At least I don't think I rate anything objectively. If I rate the movie, it's every time my subjective point of view, and I do the same with games.
No, I completely agree with that, but I do think that there are some objective qualities that have to go into your review, because like you can say, okay, like if you play a game, I'm trying to think of an example, that might be fun, but let's say it's graphics, okay, like it's a 360 launch title. I think it's you can say, I enjoy how it looks, like it has this retro feel to it. But if the game's still butt ugly, I think it's only fair that you point that out. You may say that I enjoy it because it gives it this nostalgic feel.
Yeah, like,
but I don't.
Sorry.
I don't think it's fair for you to say that this is a 10-10, even though this game looks like crap. To prove my double standard is that I would probably not downgrade Wii games for their graphics.
What's the limitation of the system, not the...
Well, not so much the limitation of the systems. I think if you're smart about it, just because you don't technically do HD and all this fancy stuff, you don't have to, like Zelda, Mario, and the Metroid games, and, you know, even No More Heroes have a style to them that really kind of hides the limitations of the system. So they're technically not great games, but they're very sound visually, if that makes sense.
Yeah, well, when I mentioned Shadows of the Damned earlier, like I said, I liked it a lot. But there's one single part of it, like where you start in like a 2D shooter. It's kind of bad. But for me personally, I don't mind it. It doesn't affect me at all. If I'm going to review it, I'm going to... Yeah, but if I'm going to review it, I'm going to have to talk about how some of the gameplay in it is kind of, I don't know, below average and stuff like that. It has to be added in. I have to talk about that.
Yeah, I think it has to be considered, but... And I think this is where I differ from a lot of people on the matter, is I tend to look at it from more of an experiential kind of viewpoint, where it's like, if there's some things about it that are kind of not great, but it's still fun, like if the experience is still good, I'll mention the shitty things, but like, if they don't detract from the experience, I don't consider them to be that important.
Exactly.
I think Uncharted franchise as a whole speaks to that, because Uncharted, if you take it for any of its single parts, is not a really well done game in any one aspect. It's not a great shooter, it's not a great platformer, it's not a great melee game, but if you take it as the sum of its parts, it's a fantastic experience. And I think that's kind of the thing where, like, sometimes you are better than the sums of your parts, and I think that can be fair, but again, I still think it would be a discredit if you didn't mention that, like, this part isn't that great. For instance, and we'll probably end on this because we're really pushing the hour and 20-minute mark, is, like, I've always said I don't like Rockstar games because I think the core gameplay behind them is really antiquated. I hate the notion they have terrible aiming, shooting mechanics, really old school melee combat, and I really hate the notion of having to hold down A to sprint. I could see how somebody can, like, the whole of the experience, the whole free roaming, building your characters, doing all these side missions, but to me, I don't think the core mechanics are sound, and I haven't thought that since Grand Theft Auto 3, but everybody seems to give them a pass for the experience of the franchise.
All right. Well, I don't have anything else to add, and we've took a long time on this conversation.
So, yes, I want to thank you all for joining us. As usual, you can find us on iTunes, Dual Wielding. If not, it's under the Nerds on the Rocks band. If you find that podcast as well, you can leave us reviews. Feedback, what you like, what you don't like. We seem to introduce and drop segments every other week at this point.
Yeah, so leave us a review and then tell us the reasoning behind your review philosophy.
Make sure it's in 1,000 words or more.
And make sure it's objectively subjective.
And if it's under 9 and 10, I'm gonna shoot you.
It's iTunes only uses the 5-star system, so make sure it's 5 stars or nothing at all. That's my policy. But yes, I'm not even gonna try to say a name. Chad, Daniel, Martin, and myself. This has been Dual Wielding episode 51. Thank you.